The Nikola Badger pickup truck is dead. The GM deal with Nikola, practically dead. Nikola's stock dropped 25% yesterday. It's been cut in half in just the past week. As of today, the lockup on a ton of insider shares expired, meaning people like Trevor Milton can finally sell their stock. Trevor Milton, as you might recall, Nikola's founder, who resigned back in September amid numerous fraud allegations. He resigned, but he was able to keep around 90 million shares of Nikola stock, and as many as 160 million shares were unlocked today. Our short position in Nikola, extremely profitable, but instead of taking our profits yesterday, we doubled down. Today on Dumb Money, the reason we are all in our big Nikola short.
This is Dumb Money Live with Chris Camillo, Dave Hansen, and Jordan McClain, streaming live on YouTube. We are Dumb Money.
Hey there, Dave here along with Chris and Jordan. We are Dumb Money and we doubled down on our Nikola short after the stock dropped 25% yesterday. I picked up some puts yesterday. Chris, I know you did too. That is paying off already. The stock is down another 15% or so today. Way back in September, Nikola and General Motors announced a deal where GM would supply batteries and the body architecture and the fuel cell systems and the factory, and they would actually build Nikola's Badger pickup truck in exchange for an 11% stake of the company, $700 million up front to cover their expenses, and then came the fraud allegations against Nikola, and GM had to decide what to do. Seemed like it was actually a pretty good deal for GM. If Nikola was able to actually market and sell the Badger, GM would make it for them. And if Nikola's stock went up, it could mean billions of dollars of free money for GM. But as of yesterday, that's not happening. GM pulled the plug. And the new deal, which technically is a non-binding memorandum of understanding, GM says they're basically willing to sell their GM fuel cells and their GM battery systems to Nikola. No stake in the company, no manufacturing partnership. Nikola is basically a customer buying GM parts, which I'm pretty sure if I wanted to buy some GM parts and was willing to pay for it, they would sell them to me. Complete disaster for Nikola, a day before insiders and early investors and Trevor able to sell what could be more than 160 million shares. So that's where we are now. Chris, Jordan, what do you think? How quickly are you going to sell? What happens to the stock from here?
I just want to, that was a great opening, Dave. I want to correct you on one small but very large word choice there. Mm-hmm. Yes, they agreed to sell Nikola their fuel tech, right? Like that piece of it, right? That piece they're willing to sell them cost plus, right? And that's not even a firm deal, right? That still hasn't been fully
executed. The terms haven't been. They basically have agreed to consider selling it to them in a non-binding letter.
But they have not agreed to do that with their batteries, which is a really important point. So those are two totally different things. I find it amazing that they actually separated those two worlds as part of this agreement. It was a fine point, but I think maybe one of the most important aspects of that press release yesterday, because GM essentially said, yes, we don't really have any major customers for this one thing related to hydrogen cells, right? And it would be really kind of cool if you guys had the money to pay us to develop that for you. It's like the ultimate test partner. Why not? We got nothing to lose. It's basically we've been working on it forever. We're looking for someone to pay us $1 billion to do this, right? So that's an obvious thing. But our batteries? Well, we'd rather keep our batteries for our own cars, is what they said yesterday. Without saying that, they were saying that because they did not commit to selling Nikola any batteries, okay? Because GM is going to have plenty of their own EVs. And as we know from Tesla, batteries are in short supply. So Nikola is now going to have to find a new battery partner. And they already came out and said, they kind of hinted at this. I think it was last week or a couple weeks ago when their CEO came out and spoke. He hinted that, well, we do have kind of a backup plan for that. So this is unbelievable.
It's not just that they didn't commit to the batteries. They didn't commit to anything. GM basically said, yeah, we'll still put out a joint press release saying that there's this letter that we can mutually talk about how we have this non-binding commitment. But a non-binding commitment is, I mean, what is a non-binding commitment? That's not a commitment at all.
You've got like a relationship, right?
So yeah, and two people know each other. But there's no reason for GM. There's zero reason for GM not to move forward on the fuel cell side. It's the dream. GM has been looking for someone to do this with them on the fuel cell side. So, by the way, they're going to pay them profitable, not cost, cost plus. So they're going to charge them a markup so they can profit off the development of the fuel cell. GM, that's a genius move for GM, right?
Absolutely.
They'll never say no to that. For fuel?
Well, they won't say, but the thing will never materialize. We know this, Chris. It's not going to happen.
Well, it doesn't matter if it happens or not, because the GM has nothing to lose, is all I'm saying. But, the thing that Nikola, to show you what GM thought about Nikola, let's not move beyond the fact that they're not doing the Badger. That deal's done. The stock deal is done, right? Because the stock deal was kind of tied to the Badger deal, right? So the Badger deal's done. The stock deal is done. But the battery deal, that's where all the insight is in this press release. Because if GM had any faith in having an actual partnership with Nikola, they would have said, you know what? We're going to agree to sell you batteries. They're not agreeing to even sell them batteries. That's how little faith GM has after looking under the hood of Nikola. They're not even agreeing to sell them batteries for their big rigs, because Nikola is going to have two types. Remember, they said they're going to have the fuel cell and the battery and pure, all right, pure EV on the big rigs. So now they have to find another partner for that. Guys, they are literally back to square one. Nikola has nothing more than they have a working mock-up truck, I guess, right?
They have one that they can roll down a hill, that it's at least structurally sound enough that if it doesn't hit too many bumps, it doesn't fall apart as it goes downhill.
No, they have a truck they can actually they can drive this truck. I know they could drive the rig, but I mean, how much is that worth? $7 billion, $5 billion, $4 billion? I mean, 2 years ago this company would be trading at a quarter right now, 50 cents, right?
Yeah. And as of right now, it's still trading above $17. After you see these every single day, it opens down.
Yeah, $5 to $7 billion. Wow, guys, I have so much to say on this. Jordan, where's your head on this? You're muted, dude.
You're muted.
I was muted. Yeah. No, I hate it. I hate all of it. I hate that a lot of investors fell for something like this with like literally no material plans. You've got fraud. You've got false advertising. I mean, it's a big issue, right?
Don't say fraud, because we don't know that there's fraud.
Potential fraud.
Allegations of fraud. Allegations.
Allegations. I will say this. You guys know I really, really do not sit well with companies that do things that I perceive as being unethical. And I've been involved with some in my past career. I've always done the right thing. It once got me demoted very early on in my career by raising my hand and being like a whistleblower. And since that day, it really pisses me off, right? And as an investor, it pisses me off. You know, this deal has pissed me off for a long time. And today I have somewhat more faith in the market and just in general common sense. Now, the fact that it's still trading at $6 billion, $5 billion, whatever it is, I got to get over that. But I have somewhat more faith that this deal fell apart. I know they're trying to hide how badly it fell apart in that press release, but
at this moment, it's still a $6.6 billion company.
Let's talk about the trade. Who's trading this? Let me tell you what I did. I was short 10,000 shares. I'm now short 20,000 shares. And I was short, I did have 250 put contracts. I then doubled down yesterday morning, right at the open, to 500 put contracts at the $25 strike. I have since exited those put contracts and replaced them with new put contracts after taking a massive six-figure profit today at the the $18 strike price. So I now have 600 or 718 puts And I also increased, no, I kept my short position at 20,000 shares. 20,000 shares short, and I think I want to say 600 puts at 18, which is a replacement. It was like a trading up of the 25s. The 25s got so in the money, guys. I had to sell them. I had to take those profits. And I want to talk about the risk factor, by the way.
And what month are you buying these?
Month? They expire Friday.
The Friday ones? Yeah. See, my concern with this stock is that they are, and historically have been, master showmen, right? They basically put on a big show, they'll drop a press release, they'll promise something, they'll have some groundbreaking news that temporarily puts the stock up. If we look back at a historic chart, you just see it. Here's a 6-month chart where it's down and then boom, it goes up, and then down and then boom, it goes up. And then my concern on weeklies is they could have some crazy news come out today that just ruined my short-term stock play. So I actually bought some Januaries, and I bought them 20, and I paid more for them because of that extra time premium. I have no thought that Nikola is going to recover and do well. That's not the way I see this company going. But I didn't think that. I didn't put it past them to not have a press release saying that we have some groundbreaking new development, partnership, promise thing that would temporarily shoot the stock up.
Well, not just that. You've got massive short interest, so you can have a short squeeze at any time. That's what drives me nuts about companies like that, is that, Chris, you've seen through it since, you know, I don't know, 5 or 6 months ago. And I think we've all, to a certain extent, seen through the smoke and mirrors. We've been saying
snake oil about this company for a while now.
Yeah, let's talk.
I think smoke and mirrors is the correct term, right? Because it's drawings, it's ideas, it's concepts, and it's not a lot of manufacturing.
Yeah, it's stock collabs, which is what our original episode was. Let's talk about numbers, guys. They have about 45 million shares short, right? So let's just put that in the context. 45 million shares short. We have about 160 million, 170 million shares that are coming on the market this week that are now possible to sell. Okay, now we don't know how many of those are going to actually try to be sold on the market, but that's a combination of Milton's share, what's his name shares, and VCs that were backing the company.
Warrants and some things that basically existed but could not be sold until today.
Yeah, so here's the thing.
I've seen anywhere from 100 million to 160 million. 161 million is the highest number I saw.
Yeah, and so here's my thesis. I don't think there's going to be a major short squeeze in terms of a news event this week, Dave. The news is out. They put out the news. They put it out yesterday. By the way, I think, call me crazy, this might be a little bit of a conspiracy here. Tell me what you guys think.
I love conspiracies.
I think that they are so upset at our boy. Was it Trevor or Travis?
Trevor.
Yeah.
Trevor Milton. I think they are so upset at Trevor for what he did, okay, that they put out that news release yesterday on purpose, because they didn't have to put that news release out yesterday. They could have waited until the 3rd and had him – gave him the ability to exit his shares prior to this news being released.
Yes.
I think they didn't want to give him that ability. They did not want to give him the opportunity to exit out of his shares and then have this news be dumped.
Which is interesting. So, it's not just him. It's also other insiders. It's also early investors. So it's a lot of people who had these shares.
You punish everybody, right? And so it's,
literally half of it's him, though, you know? Right. And
the right thing to do, though, was to fully disclose any possible bad news before all of the insiders have the ability to sell. I totally agree with the company making the decision to release that statement ahead of them being able to sell their own shares, right?
So I think the buying, all the buying power this week is coming. There, I'm sure there's some, you know, weird retail traders. I've been reading them on Twitter all week that still believe in Nikola. I mean, whatever. I'm not even going to go there, okay? But the majority of the buying pressure this week is coming from the 45 million shares short. So when you have short shares, for those that watch the show that aren't familiar with the process, you to exit that position, you have to purchase stock. So I have 20,000 shares. At some point in the next 2 to 3 days, I'm likely to purchase 20,000 shares of Nikola to exit that position. And I'll tell you why I'm going to exit in the next 2 days. I feel that while there's not going to be a news-related short squeeze this week, because I think the news is out, that's happened, I do think that as we get close to the end of the week, kind of I'm going to call it second half of Thursday to Friday, I think all the people like myself that have made massive gains on Nikola over the past, you know, week, 2 weeks, whatever it is, are going to cover their short positions. Okay. Not all of them. I don't think all 45 million shares are going to cover, but we could be looking at 5, 10, 15 million shares. That's a huge amount of shares covering, 20 million shares. Now, the reason why I'm trading it this week and I'm holding my short until at least end of day tomorrow or midday tomorrow is the 160 million shares, guys. I don't know how much of it, but I think a lot. I know the way that these shares are sold. So they're not sold by, like, it's not us on Ameritrade going to sell 10,000 shares, sell 100,000 shares. Yeah. The way that these institutional shares are sold is they're put into an algo, okay? And the algo essentially dollar cost averages them using a whole number of different algo. You know, you can pick and choose what type of algo you want to use to exit those shares. But they basically slowly exit those shares over a period of time. So if you're Milton, you might say, hey, I want to be 100% out of my shares by Thursday, right? And it will slowly sell those shares between now and Thursday based on volumes that are coming into the stock, right? Based on the bids. So I don't think that the institutions that are selling this stock are going to say, we're out of it today. I don't think they're doing that. I think they're picking some number of days, or it could be weeks, but I think they're picking some number of days and saying, hey, we want to get rid of 30% of our position, 40% of our position over the next 2 days, 3 days, 2 weeks. I think it's probably days versus weeks, honestly, because of so much selling pressure, they want to get it over with. So I think tomorrow is going to be another down day. I could be totally wrong, but I think there's going to be a whole nother round of massive selling pressure coming into Nikola tomorrow. And I'm hoping that we kind of get down to that, you know, today took us down, what, 3 points roughly. I'm hoping tomorrow takes us down another 2-3. I have no idea if that's the reality, but based on 30 years of trading and seeing this so many times, I feel like there's a lot more selling pressure coming in the next 48 hours than buying pressure. Now that could switch towards the end of the week, maybe. But I want to hold my short position right now for at least another day.
Well, and speaking of this kind of algo trading, we do also need to talk about Tesla and the S&P 500, because yesterday the news was announced that they're going to put that in the index 100% on, I think it was the 21st, which means the last trading day is the 18th, which means unlike the program selling that you're talking about, where if Trevor wanted to sell all of his shares by a certain day, the algos would try to give him get him the best price and not sell it all at once. They're basically going to be buying all of Tesla at the same time. It's all going to happen at once.
Yeah. But do you think those are open market operations, Dave, or do you think those are back, like, you know, both, kind of private deals?
A little both of everything, yeah.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of shares.
Dave, I think the reason why they made that decision is, you know, they have been discussing this with all the major funds and ETFs, right? So this discussion's been going on for the past week and a half, 2 weeks.
Yeah. And they asked them if they wanted to do it in two tranches or just rip the Band-Aid off and do it all at once. And apparently the answer was all at once, because that's what they're doing.
Yeah. So what does that tell you? Doesn't that tell you that they're not having, I mean, that they're on schedule to complete the transaction? Doesn't that tell, because I think if I was a fund and I was already approaching 50% or 60% or 70%, I'm going to be like, no way can you separate it into two? Because if I'm already above 50% at this point, Now I have to potentially sell shares because I don't want to be over allocated.
But the reality is, as the stock fluctuates, they are going to be either making or losing money by buying them in advance. Their mandate is not to try to make or lose money. Their mandate is to mirror the S&P. So there's really no advantage or no incentive for them to do anything in advance of the official date, which means there's no reason for them to accumulate. It actually would be a negative for them if they did anything in advance and if they had a big inventory of Tesla stock just sitting on the shelf, potentially getting out of whack with what the S&P average is doing, because that's going to look bad for them. So they actually kind of have to wait until the last minute and do it all at once.
Yeah, but they're not waiting to the last minute and buying those orders. I mean, a lot of these deals are being contracted in advance, whether they're actually happening now or being contracted at set rates. I mean, there is going to be a discrepancy, Dave, between what these funds look like this month and what the S&P actually did. And people are going to know that that's just what they're going to have to deal with Tesla.
Or do they just do it based on the previous day's closing price with some of these hedge funds? Do they just say like, hey, you know, we'll buy them at, you know, a dollar off of whatever, $2 off of what the closing price is.
Contractually agreeing to do it at a, right, you know, whatever the closing price was on Friday, that's what we're going to do the transaction for.
And it's all being hedged, right? It's all being hedged. It's all being arbitraged out. And by the way, there are funds that have to do this, but then there's tons of other funds that are discretionary that don't have to mimic it perfectly, but are in the process of buying those shares now. I sold my Tesla, not all of it, just my $1 million allotment of Tesla yesterday. I made a decision. I didn't know what that decision was going to be last night. I didn't want to mess with it. I just wanted to get out of the trade. I was up so much. I felt like, for the most part, I felt like we were approaching some level of information parity, meaning people were going to get their trades in for a lot of these ETFs. The arbitragers of this event are all that Tesla move that you're looking at, Dave, those are all people kind of arbitraging what needs to happen, right? And making sure that they have enough shares to sell their clients. So I felt like, you know, I just wanted to get out of it. I'm doing other things with my money right now. So I'm in my long Tesla, but I'm out of that short-term Tesla trade.
You're just selling, this is basically just the extra share. You bought $1 million as soon as they announced that it was going to be officially added to the S&P, and yesterday is your exit point for that.
I made about $170,000 on that trade. So I bought $1 million of Tesla after the deal was announced. This is after the S&P made that announcement after hours, it had already gone up $40. So I purchased that $1 million with Tesla already up $40. And just in the last week and a half, I was able to turn 16-17% on that $1 million. It was 160, 170,000 on that trade. It was a trade I'm really proud of because it's a trade that intuitively just makes sense, right? Like it should work because I talked about this a couple weeks ago. It's an anomaly. It's a black swan, white swan. It's an event that the market doesn't understand how to price because they've never seen anything like it before. And from my experience, and this kind of goes back to Nassim Taleb's thesis on black swan, the market will always underestimate and underappreciate these large events, and they'll get caught behind. You know, they'll get caught up. They won't be prepared for them. They're not going to understand how much they're going to actually impact the market. And that was my assumption, that they had never seen anything even close to this. And so the market doesn't even know how to deal with this. So I think that's what ended up happening, right? And look, could you imagine, anyone think this was going to happen to Tesla? I didn't know how much it was going to go up, but I knew it was going to go up a lot more than people realize.
Yeah. Well, and to go from, this is a year-to-date chart, to go from like 100 to 500, like this is crazy. I'm happy to be a part of it, but I would never have expected that kind of move.
It's absolutely bonkers. But I love it when things work out the way they're supposed to work. Tesla worked out exactly the way that I thought it should work out. And Nikola worked out exactly the way I thought it should work out so far, right? So I could get burned tomorrow, by the way, guys. If Tesla like snaps up tomorrow, I can get burned pretty hard but not so hard that it won't be a super profitable trade. Because remember, I sold my 25 puts today at massive six-figure gain. It was like $140,000 gain. And then I took basically roughly how much money I made on that gain, or maybe a little less actually, and I bought fresh put. I took less. I don't know how much I spent on these, probably like $130,000, $140,000 on these new puts.
Yeah.
But I can get wiped out on these puts tomorrow. It's definitely possible if Nikola creeps up a couple dollars, yeah. I can get wiped out on that. So I hope it doesn't. It's worth the risk to me. I'm willing to keep it for one more day.
Now, when did you start shorting Nikola? Was it in the 30s? Was it all the way up there at 35?
No. I put my first super heavy short on, I don't know, the last time it was at 29 and it dropped to 16. Yeah. And I sold most of that Nikola, not all of it. I sold most of it down at like 16, 17 bucks. I covered it. So that was a massive, massive gain. And then I kept 5,000 of those short shares. And then it went all the way back up to 28. It went up to like 30 something, 40, right? Mm-hmm. The last few days. But I didn't sell, I didn't cover. What I did was I doubled down on it. So I doubled down from 5,000 to 10,000. Okay. And then when Nikola dropped to $22 a share, I doubled down again to 20,000 shares or
yeah,
whatever.
You rolled those 25 puts yeah. down to the $18
strike
price.
No, I'm talking about the shorting.
It's pure short. Gotcha.
Pure short. I also last week, remember on our show on Friday, I said I'm also buying those puts on Nikola. And then I doubled down those puts yesterday morning when it hit 22. I doubled down and then I sold them a couple hours ago. And then I bought new puts, 600 of them, at the $18 strike, instead of the $25 strike. So this is last night, I didn't sleep much last night. I was kind of mostly just excited. I wasn't nervous because I had a pretty high conviction. Like, you know, when you're nervous, you're like, I don't know what the hell is going to happen. You have no clue. I had so much conviction that the only thing I was thinking about, like at 2 a.m. last night, 2:30, was why didn't I go in deeper? Like, I always feel in these trades, I should go in even deeper. I should have gone in deeper on this trade. So I'm not selling yet, but I'm about one day away, I think. Maybe one and a half.
Well, we will have to see where it goes. What else?
Speaking of EV news, we had Hindenburg, which put out the initial short report on Nikola that kicked off all this fun news. They are shorting another stock, Kandi automaker, which they allege of massive fraud. And so we'll see how that goes.
Is this Handy?
Kandi, K-A-N-D-I. They are an EV maker out of China. And apparently they're, you know, have self-dealing contracts where they're selling themselves batteries and orders and things like that is what Hindenburg is alleging.
Well, that would not be surprising. I mean, like, that's interesting. Yeah. Has this been all over? I've been so focused.
This came out yesterday morning, I believe, Dave. Is that correct?
I actually didn't see it until today when you were telling me about it.
Yeah.
And the whole reason it came up is I was asking you about Neo and why is Neo down? And all of the EVs, non-Teslas
like, all
are down today.
But it's not just all Nikola. I mean, Kandi has a big, because that's in Neo's backyard, right? And so you get a potential fraudulent company in Neo's backyard. It has a bad look. It's a real bad look.
Yeah, I'll tell you, these Kandi cars, I'm looking at them right now, they do not look like Neos. That's
no,
for sure.
Like, no, no. Like, you're talking, super. It looks like a smart car is what it looks like.
It looks like a Yugo.
Yeah, almost. It's not good. It's not a high-end car for sure.
No, and so making an electronic, a cheap EV like that, boy, you know, the sector is getting hit. It's hard to say how much I don't get involved with valuations, guys, like Neo, like it's kind of ridiculous. The sector is getting hit. It just is. It's getting hit. I'll look into that short report. It doesn't take much to convince me that a Chinese EV maker is double counting revenue by selling themselves stuff. Like, that makes a lot of sense to me.
You remember that European vacation, the kind of recent one that came out like a year or so, 2 years ago? And it was that car that like was facing in two directions with like plugs and stuff. Doesn't that look a lot like it?
It actually looks total. I know exactly what you're talking about, Dave. And yes, it does. It does look like that. I don't know. I have to look into $25,000. This is gonna be a fun one. I have. If Nicola.
Well, you can buy this in the United States.
Yeah, this is CandyAmerica.com that I'm on now.
Well, I did not realize. I knew they're a full-on NASDAQ-listed ADR. So, well,
Jordan, they're saying they're coming to the United States. Yeah. I mean, they can never say a lot of stuff to hype that stock up, right?
Now, that one looks like the Mini, the Cooper, right? And it's only $17,000. $10,000 after a tax credit. Let me buy one.
But guys, what do you have? What did we learn from Nikola? I think what did the industry learn from Nikola is that, Milton's going to walk away if he sells his shares this week, a billionaire, right?
Yes.
If he sells his shares this week, a guy that has pending lawsuits against him that left the company on suspicious terms, right?
That is, just the worst part about this whole story is that. He might get away with it and end up being a billionaire. And if the allegations prove to be true, that would be terrible.
Well, here's the deal.
If he's an innocent bystander and ended up making money, great. But I don't like the idea of the allegations.
He can argue all day long, and it's a legitimate argument that, like, Neo doesn't make their own cars, right? And they're just basically drawing things and coming up with ideas, and they're outsourcing that manufacturing. So they could easily argue, Trevor could easily argue that, hey, he was just caught earlier in this game. If he was given enough time, that GM deal might have materialized. And so he's got a lot, he can make an argument.
Yes, he can make an argument.
Very little ground to stand on.
There's a difference, like, they were saying that they had all their own tech, their own battery, their own this, which technically on paper they were working on it.
Yeah.
But now that they don't have, like, GM, now they're like, oh, we can't. Dude, come on, dude. Like, everything has been so sketchy with every aspect of this company launch. And by the way, it worked. I told you the sketchiest part was in the middle of all the worst stuff going down. When you're a founder of a company that's publicly traded and there's allegations all over the place and everything's about the pop, that he then gets on a plane in the middle of a pandemic and flies to, the Caribbean with all these people. I don't know if it was a company plane. I think I heard rumors it was a company plane or something like that. And I don't have any idea if that's true. But he's then – pictures are coming out on Instagram and he's defending it and he's talking – dude, the way that he spoke, I can't even get into it. He's not even permitted now to get on Twitter or Instagram anymore with his deal. That just pretty much tells you what you need to know, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
He can't talk about the company.
That's all
Hey, I don't disagree. I was just making the case.
Yeah. I'll let court play out. I have no idea if he's actually guilty of doing anything that is legally, fraud or not. The courts will deal with that. But I just don't like the ethics of how he's treated this whole opportunity. But he's going to walk away a billionaire, guys. He's going to walk away a billionaire. Now, that's kind of amazing, isn't it? Like, next week, he'll be cash money.
Well, that's a good question, right? If you exchange maybe, 2 years in prison for, going crazy, promoting some crazy business to become a billionaire, is that worth it? I don't know. Not for me. I wouldn't do that, but. For some people, it might be
$1 billion.
That's a lot of money.
Most people would go spend a year in a nice resort like prison for $1 billion.
Hang out with Bernie Madoff for a little while.
Yeah, as long as it's a country club style prison, whatever.
Yeah.
Anyway,
I just don't ever plan to be in that situation where that is the option.
By the way, speaking of country club prisons, I was thinking about Milton and Nicola, and I started to research our Fire Festival guy. What's his name?
Oh, yeah. What is that guy's name?
Yeah, I researched him last night. I'll pull him up here. It was really interesting what's going on with him right now, because he, and his name is, you'll remember since I said
it. Well, because we watched Billy
McFarland.
Yeah, we watched a documentary that the same documentarian, it was like his first documentary that did Fire Festival.
Yes, yes. Billy McFarland, get ready for this. Ready, guys? He is in solitary confinement right now because he evidently tried to do a podcast from prison, okay, that I guess they don't look too fondly on now. And so he, in addition to the guy he was doing the podcast with in prison, are both in solitary confinement for like, I don't know, a few weeks. So
how do you do a podcast from prison? That just seems like that might be technology they don't give you access to.
No, Dave, they're allowed to use their cell phones in this prison. So he must be in a country club prison, right? But I guess they don't like the concept of doing podcasts. So he gets out of prison in 2023. I'm sure he'll get out sooner.
Oh, wait, McFarland is in prison?
Yes, dude. Well, country club prison.
I didn't realize that that had already gone down. Okay.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. He's there till 2023. Did a podcast. He called it like the Fire Something podcast. I can't even believe this.
I mean, it's a brand name.
How can they
name
let you make money off of something that you did that's...
How's he ever going to get away from that? I mean, his best chance at making money in the future is doing other subsidiaries of his one brand that everyone's going to associate him with for life, Fire.
Man.
His people have an Instagram account that are run by Billy McFarland's people, and they have all this Fire stuff, and they have pictures of him in prison with his prison friends, and, like, it's... Dude...
Hey, I was watching the chat, and a good point came up. We're printing Trevor a billionaire, but in the same week that we lose Tony Shea, which is a huge, huge bummer. Sunset Cycling said that.
Yeah, that is a huge bummer. That was one really good dude.
He was a grade A entrepreneur. That guy's awesome.
He was, and one of my good friends, Sonny Garcia, worked for him for a few years. And literally had nothing but the greatest things to say. He's like the greatest person, the greatest guy, super smart.
Completely an innovator in how to run a business and how to handle HR and how to incentivize people. And just, you can't say enough good things about.
Yeah.
People don't understand.
And if you're watching and you don't know who we're talking about, do it. Buy the book, Delivering Happiness. Read it. Great book. It's a really short read too. You can knock that out in a weekend. You learn all about Tony.
It is like a top 10 book for sure when it comes to early stage operations or just corporate management. By the way, his company Zappos, people might not appreciate it, but it was one of the ultimate execution plays. I mean, the way he executed at that company when Amazon acquired them, I mean, just brilliant. Brilliant execution of a startup. Just selling shoes, man. Selling shoes.
Better
than anyone else.
Making it top of mind again, I went on and bought three things from Zappos just yesterday. And by the way, the book, I just checked, the book is 2 to 4 weeks out because of, I guess, renewed.
Oh, yeah, that makes sense. I mean, you know.
You can get the Kindle version, though.
I like that guy, man. He's the real deal, dude.
I read the Kindle version. I'm Kindle people.
By the way, can I put out there, we didn't talk about it yesterday, but Collectors Universe got acquired yesterday, private equity. So that's kind of a nice little dumb money win, right? I mean, that would happen a lot quicker than we would have anticipated. But we knew that, remember the one thing I talked about in that Collectors Universe episode? There is tremendous value sitting underneath that company that really was not, no one was taking advantage of all the value there. Like all the things they could be doing, they dominate the space and was just like this old school company that really wasn't innovating. Well, everybody saw it and someone moved on it and they just took the company out, right? So, well, no more upside, but they're acquired. So that had a happy ending, which I think is super cool. If for anyone that was in that trade from the Dumb Money community. Congrats. It's really, really cool. And by the way, guys, we are working on our Pokemon Vegas Dumb Money event. We have nothing to say yet, but we're working on it. And hopefully in the next couple months, we'll have more information. It'll be late in 2021. But that is going to be happening.
And if you're looking for information or want to know about it and be among the first two here, go to dumbmoney.tv. And if you just look on that page, about halfway down, there's this little strip where it says, want to attend? Get on the list. Click that. Give us your email, and we will let you know as soon as event details have been finalized. All we know is it's going to be in Vegas sometime next year. Pandemic pending.
Yep, and we were looking at a really cool outdoor venue that, you know, so we're trying to make it as safe as possible. But it will be late in the year. Hopefully we'll all be vaccinated. You know, I heard, my wife told me today, I don't know where she found out, maybe the Today Show.
I heard it too.
Probably Today Show. To get to fly, you might need to get vaccinated. You watched the Today Show. You probably saw the same thing, right?
Yeah.
Is that what they're talking about?
I heard that. And then I also heard they think August will be the time when it's just pretty much available to anyone.
Yeah, that's a long time.
That's about it.
But that is a guys, that's a big deal. So like, if they're going to say that you need to be vaccinated to fly, you know what that's going to do? That's going to basically get people to get vaccinated, but also it's going to get people flying, because the confidence level of people getting on a flight is going to go through the roof. Same thing with cruise. Like I had a conversation with another travel agent that's a good friend of ours from college, and he's a big cruiser. He cruises constantly. His entire life is cruising. And he was actually pretty down and out about the cruise industry going into early 2021, and I was surprised. And so I was like, "What? Why? And so his rationale was that people, basically, they're not going to be able to get rid of the pandemic on cruise ships, because every time they load it up, it's going to spread and it's going to turn into this hotbed issue. And like, the world's going to continue with everything but cruises." And it was an interesting perspective, and it really made me think, because we have a lot of cruise trades, right? But if they enforce a vaccination rule, okay, to where everyone that gets on the cruise has to prove they're vaccinated, like the airlines, like you were heard about today, that's a game changer, right? Like, all of a sudden, I think people's comfort level getting on a cruise goes right straight up, right? If you know that not only are you vaccinated, but every single person on the ship is vaccinated, yeah. That's a game changer, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, I was just trying to find details on the story so that I didn't speak, because I was only half awake when I hear these things, especially during that first 30 minutes of the Today Show. It's just like, I hear the song and I know it's about time to think about getting up. But this is from Fast Company. They say that Australian airline Qantas announced that it is going to require proof of vaccination to fly. Other airlines are still deciding. American Airlines said that they would implement such a policy. A company asked if they would implement such a policy. It said that the airline is pleased that the vaccine development is moving forward. It's too early to comment on policies related to the vaccine. Delta could not share specifics either. So, sounds like Australian airline Qantas is early on this one. And I'm trying to see if there's any additional information.
I love the idea. I mean, because it's really hard for a government to enforce something like that, but for a private company to just say, hey, we're not going to offer our service unless you...
No shirt, no shoes, no service. We can deny service to anyone because it's our private business. And I think it does make sense.
So one thing... Someone's asking about, just real quick, someone's asking about Michaels. I don't like the data I'm seeing in Michaels enough to trade Michaels. Also, someone's asking about, sorry, guys. Where is it? Michaels. Oh, Zoom, a Zoom short. We have a high conviction short thesis on Zoom in Discord. Guys, I thought about it a lot. I just can't quite get behind it yet, because it's just undetermined the degree to which Zoom is going to fall off a cliff at the end of this pandemic, and how much of that business they're going to be able to keep. So it's not as obvious to me. I haven't read the full short thesis, and I need to go through it, so I don't want to comment on too much.
Yeah, I need to read it too, but I would think, I mean, just thinking through it logically in my mind, it seems like there's not going to be a cliff, right? It's not going to be like a one day everybody's using Zoom, and then the next day or the next week everybody stops. I think you're going to see a long transition period.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And so for that case, Jordan, I could see Zoom falling. I always say, like, I don't like trying to predict the future so much as really understand what's happening in the present. And you could run your scenarios. And if you want to run those scenarios, what would you do in each scenario? I don't even really have a scenario, a realistic scenario that plays out in the next 6 months that has Zoom just totally falling apart, right? And it's, by the way, the market already knows that the pandemic's going to be over, right? So, like, it's not like they don't realize that when they're looking at Zoom right now and they're trying to factor in what Zoom should be worth. I think it's kind of crazy where Zoom's at personally, but I'm not a valuation guy. I'm not going to get mixed up in that. As we know, companies can stay overvalued way longer than you ever would have imagined, Nikola, right? For one. I mean, you can make a case for Tesla. I mean, it's insane, but
yeah,
I'm not going to mess with it. So,
ooh, somebody's bringing up Apple and Apple calls. Man, we need to do a show about Apple. Jordan. Dude, I am obsessed with this M1 chip and the future possible M1X chip that they're talking about.
Yes.
And then I did a bunch of research on what actually makes this thing more responsive and quicker than some of the Intel chips, and it is fascinating. Also, just the story of how Apple got here. From PowerPC to switching to Intel and then back to their own, because it's not, M1's not a chip, right? It's got chips in it, but it's also this whole unified architecture, and so it's a really interesting play that
it's a system on chip is what they're calling it.
It's SoC, right? Mm-hmm. And this might be a new fad for the computer industry, right? Which could really put AMD and Intel at risk, at least on the consumer PC market,
especially on low power, low heat chips where Intel just right now apparently cannot even compete. They can't even come close to the specs and power performance at all. And by the way, my M1 MacBook Air that I ordered was lost apparently in the shipment from China.
No.
And I got an alert that it was supposed to be delivered yesterday. I ordered, I specifically configured one that would be able to be delivered as quickly as possible. I think I changed the hard drive. I got the most expensive one because it could get here like 2 weeks earlier. And so they now have two different ones coming. They auto replaced that one. And then I saw on their website, if I ordered another one, I'd actually be able to get it maybe a week sooner. So I have now two coming as quickly as possible. I'm so excited to get this computer.
I want to get it.
Did they lose like a whole cargo container?
I tried to find that on, trying to get the customer service rep to tell me how often this happens, if that's something that they've ever heard of before. Have they had other people in this particular shipment affected? Just to see if I could find any information related to how this might impact the stock, if, like, for example, an entire cargo ship went missing. But they said that it's very rare that they've heard of it a couple of times, at least this one agent that I was talking to, and that it likely was something to do with customs or at the port or something, where basically this one did not get scanned. My particular one did not get scanned off of the boat. That's the last they saw it, is getting on the boat.
Interesting.
So, Jordan, I know you've been looking into this, and Dave, you've been kind of...
I guess it's a boat. It's probably an airplane. I'm just saying.
Airplane, ship.
I'm pretty sure it's an airplane, but...
Rickshaw, you never know.
But I was joking with the agent about, well, this literally was the slow boat from China, because I ordered this the day you guys announced the chip, and now it's lost.
Is this game changer for Apple? I mean,
I think it's game changer not only for Apple, but for Intel and AMD as well.
Yeah, this is where I'm stocks, like, yeah, I agree. I would not want to be an AMD or Intel investor right now. Now, the saving grace is that this isn't necessarily a replacement for like a server architecture, right? You wouldn't want to put this in a, like a big time server AWS, but.
No, but what you would want to do is get the next generation of this chip and stack them in parallel with each other and be able to do crazy amount of computing at almost no heat and no electricity.
By the way, you know AWS is going to do this. They just came out with a Mac EC2 instance, mm-hmm. and they said that they've got the M1 version on the way.
Interesting.
That's what I want. Here's a little overlay of AMD, Apple, and Intel charts, and you can see AMD was still rocketing and is still going good. But Intel, which, by the way, I shorted the moment I heard, not this news, but the moment I heard that Apple was not how good M1 was going to be, but the moment I heard that Apple was going to go mm-hmm. back to using their chips, and I did that short.
Worked out well for you, Dave.
I'm out of it now. It was short term.
I'm the devil's advocate here because I know we have a long, high conviction thesis for Intel in our Discord group as well that I read through this weekend. And I think there's a devil's advocate case, not anti-Apple, but kind of pro all the chip stocks, including Intel and AMD, in that this whole the pie is getting bigger, guys. So even though Apple starts to develop its own chips for its MacBooks, great, right? The entire automotive industry is getting to a point where in the next 5 to 10 years, all of those cars could be using way more chips in the cars, more sophisticated chips.
But I agree. But here's the thing: they're not going to be using Intel or AMD chipsets. They're They're going to be using ARM chipsets.
That's not what's actually happening right now, because Intel is actually gaining share in the automotive market now, and that's their largest focus. They are laser focused on automotive. They're gaining share there. They said that they have a massive TAM there that hasn't been hit. They're really laser focused on trying to figure out that market with the manufacturers. So, I mean, you might be right, but
I just think the future of this whole thing is ARM. I really feel like after reading what I've read about all this stuff, that the cat is out of the bag, or whatever that expression is. I don't even know. But people are going to start to realize, the power consumption and heat dissipation of this thing are off the charts. They could crank this. So they're running this thing at 3 gigahertz. They could run it up way higher, get way better performance, but they don't need to. They're beating AMD and Intel without cranking up the gigahertz, without having to do anything like that.
The whole difference between the Air and the Pro, it's the exact same chip, the exact same everything. They added a fan and the ability for more power to go to the chip in the Pro version. I'm trying the Air version just because I would love the idea of carrying around a super thin, lightweight thing that I could actually get some work done on, actually be able to do minor video editing, not sustained rendering or anything, but I'm excited about this computer.
Yeah.
And these are chips that were designed for phones. These are designed to be low power and everything. And they're finding out that, you know what, if we put these in real computers, it's just super efficient and everything works better.
Yeah, the biggest thing with it, you basically get multi-core performance out of single core programs, right? Because you can do out-of-order operations a lot more efficiently than you can do with a CIS computer, with an Intel chipset. And so
I think the thing that we could all agree on is it's a net positive for Apple, right?
Yeah.
One way or another, it's definitely, you can debate the degree to which Intel will be harmed long-term, right? AMD will be harmed long-term. Is the pie continuing to grow large enough to have space for them to do well? But it's a net positive for Apple, right? So my question to you guys is, when will we start to see this really hit Apple's top line? I know people are excited, like all the geeks like you guys are excited about this new generation, but is it like a year away to where they really start getting this into MacBooks, to where everyone starts to refresh their MacBooks because of the chip and the performance? Or is that going to happen right now, this quarter?
Yeah, I think so I'm in a bit of an echo chamber of tech reviewers and people who are excited about it, so I can't really separate from that and know what the common everyday computer user has heard. But the fact that Apple put it in their most affordable entry-level computer first, anyone who's considering getting a new Mac for Christmas, basically they're sold out. The earliest delivery date now is January 7th, and it keeps getting pushed further and further out. Yesterday I was able to get one delivered December 15th, so we'll see if that actually happens. But it is, I think this is a big enough change that even if you aren't someone who follows computers or you know, even cares what a gigahertz or memory or, you know, like, I think that this is kind of the kind of thing that people will hear. There's some revolutionary change and Apple is doing something different. Even if you don't understand what it is, you just understand that it's faster, better, cheaper, and it's
look, I think power different. Consumption says a lot too, right? And so this thing uses a ton less battery. The desktop version is going to use a ton less energy, which you might not really be a penny pincher and really worry about that. But eventually that's going to make its way to a data center also, right? Because that is a place where these efficiencies really add up.
And like the specs, the gigahertz and clock speeds don't actually like line up with the existing generation. So it's hard to like, and that's why the Apple charts are like generic, like lines of performance without like labels, because the labels are like not really as relevant. Yeah. I just think that it's different enough that people will latch on to the idea. And it's, I think, everybody who is considering refreshing, especially in that entry level, is going to be choosing the Apple version over the Intel version, and they're going to keep selling the Intel version because they still have so much legacy stuff that they have, you know, that supports Intel, but already all the programs that are converted seem to work, almost all of them seem to work just as efficient, if not faster, on the new Apple chips.
Right, and that's the one thing about, so when you talk about Microsoft and their Surface that doesn't perform nearly as well as this, is Microsoft going to allow Windows to run on this thing, right? And so that's another thing that we've got to find out, because, you know, if you let this operating system go onto an Apple hardware, game over, right? Mm-hmm. Why would you buy a Surface?
You're right, and I will say this too. While I don't think the common, you know, MacBook user is going to really know that much about this right now, I do think people like yourself, Dave, and tech reviewers and influencers who are going to kind of, if their respect for Apple climbs up based on this new chipset, I think that will have an impact on the brand, and the influence will kind of stream down to the rest of the market. So people like, you know, myself, obviously I research the same stuff you do, but the ordinary MacBook purchaser might not even realize why MacBook is such a big deal and it has such a buzz, but the buzz will be there, right? They're going to hear about, the buzz will be there. And by the way, when they go into the Apple store and they're looking at it, that enthusiasm will come out of the sales rep, right? Like, oh no, have you not heard? These are like the biggest deals. You Google it, look at tech reviews, look at this, like this is the laptop.
And things that actually matter to consumers, battery life. The battery in both the Air and the Pro have doubled basically, right? And that doesn't happen. Usually it's a 10-20% increase. The batteries, 20 hours on the Pro.
Well, the thing is the battery didn't double. The battery is the same size.
Same size battery. Double the performance. Efficient. Exactly.
Yeah. It is amazing. And like, would you consider upping? We already all have big Apple stakes. Would you consider upping your stake in Apple from this? Really?
Yes.
I actually went down to zero Apple not too long ago. So I'm about to buy. I'm a buy.
Wow. Zero Apples. Not something I've done more than one time in the last 15
years. I'm not very happy about it right now because I didn't foresee this coming. Who would have seen this coming?
I didn't. Nobody really saw it coming as good as it was.
No, I had no idea that it was going to be as good as it was. I knew that they were going to do it. I knew that it was going to impact Intel. I had no idea that I was going to be buying an Air and considering actually using a $1,000 computer to replace a $5,000 computer.
Well, Dave, you know they're coming out with the M1X, which is going to be on the 16 platform.
And you know that I'm going to be buying
sometime
that
next
too,
year. Now that is going to be a monster machine. So take it from 8 cores to 16 cores and probably up the RAM capabilities also.
I've already told Megan that she's going to get a hand-me-down
Apple Fitness Plus platform starting next year.
when that thing tanks.
It'll make up for it. Don't worry.
I have some interesting news on Airbnb, Dave. And I know you're invested in Airbnb.
Yep.
But one of our dumb money community members, Pedro Talarico. Everyone knows Pedro.
Everyone knows Pedro.
You know, he sent me a note, and this has kind of been widely disseminated over Twitter over the past week or so, that if you're an Airbnb superhost, that they are allowing you to buy shares in the IPO. And it's a direct IPO, right? So it's not a traditional IPO. It's one of these IPOs like Spotify did, where it's kind of a direct listing. So they're not having to pay a ridiculously stupid amount of money to a Goldman Sachs to price the IPO, and they always price it bad. Instead, they'll just kind of set the IPO and will just sell into the market at whatever that pricing happens to be based on supply and demand. But they're starting that number, Dave, pretty low, 35, 37 billion. That seems low. And so I don't think it's going to go at 35, 37. I wouldn't be surprised. Now, I might be crazy. I would be surprised to see this thing trade at 60 to 70 on IPO day, double what they're talking about.
Do you know how happy that would make me? Because the prices that they've been floating around have been kind of right where I got in, right? And so I'm hoping that that is that it's underestimated the $30 billion valuation.
It is. If I could purchase Airbnb right now at $35 billion, $37 billion, even $40 billion, I'll tell you, man, I'd put $500,000 in it right this second. Right this second. Give it to me. I'll take it. Because I think Airbnb is going to have a spectacular 2021. I really do. And beyond. So I think it's going to be a hot stock. It's a Robin Hood stock all day long, is it not?
Now, what was the reason that we didn't get in, Chris? Was it because there were municipalities that were banning the use of Airbnb for single family housing? Was that why we didn't get in?
I'll tell you why, Jordan. That was part of the reason, but another part of the reason why I didn't get in was because I had some bad trades right around that time. I don't know what it was. I don't remember exactly what I lost money in, but my account was not looking pretty around the time we had to make a decision on that Airbnb investment. I was just like, I can't keep throwing 100K, 200K. I had thrown like 300K into Robinhood. Remember, I put 300K into Robinhood. We put 200K into Unity a couple years ago. Like, I was doing all of these six-figure pre-IPO deals, and like maybe one or two of them, it already looked like they were starting to back up on us at the time. Maybe it was
WeWork.
I don't know if it was.
WeWork was going on around that time. But I think we were still thinking WeWork was going to work out at the time we were getting into Airbnb. We'll have to go back and watch our old episodes. If you go to the original Dumb Money channel, you'll see exactly what we were thinking about
WeWork
at the time.
The WeWork episode, it's so embarrassing now. We were so excited about that WeWork investment. But we were. I'm not even gonna, guys. You know what? This might sound petty, but I still like the WeWork model. I do. Now, I don't like the founder screwed it all up, all the shady stuff. Again, it always goes back to doing shady things, right? All the shady things he did that really corrupted that IPO process for WeWork. And I think then it came out red flag after red flag. I think WeWork could have worked if it was like 6 months earlier and the CEO wasn't so shady, okay? I think it would have worked out for us just fine. Okay, but
he made a ton of money too.
Just so you know, the Airbnb program is limited to superhosts in the United States, which is about 85-ish% of their hosts, and to be considered a superhost, which about 21% of the people who use Airbnb as a revenue maker for them our superhost, and that means you book 10 stays or more during a 12-month period. They have not yet said how they are going to or how much they're allowing their superhost to buy, but that's a very interesting program for Airbnb.
That is an interesting program. I'd be buying Airbnb shares at anywhere near $35 to $40 billion. I am a buyer. I'm a buyer of that. By the way,
I have something to sell you if you want to go as high as $50 billion.
Put together an SPV for him?
Yeah. I only take a 20% carry.
Someone says WeWork's a tech company. My mind won't change about that. I am not going to say WeWork is a tech company. That was BS, okay? I'm not going to say that. But I do think it was a great model. Listen, you know what's so funny? People rip on WeWork for basically taking office buildings and modifying them in a more usable way for the new generation, okay? Yet nobody rips on Carvana for basically just selling cars and moving metal in a slightly different way, just throwing crazy amounts of money at that business model. Carvana could disappear tomorrow and someone can appear with the same exact business model as long as they had enough money to throw out the infrastructure and having the spoke and wheel infrastructure of keeping cars, moving them around the country, and having plenty of money to spend on marketing dollars to attract, right? So, whatever. We lost our money there. Are you taking the write-off this year or no?
Not until they actually go out of business.
I don't know.
Fine.
I haven't had anyone advise me on that yet.
Yeah. Yeah, my accountant won't do it until they actually go out of business.
Luis Fernando wants to know, are you guys going to sell your Unity or hold it for a long time? What a nightmare. I'm not going to talk about it because I don't know what you're allowed to do. Not allowed to
yeah.
do. I don't want to even talk about it. But
I'm very happy with my position in Unity and how it seems to be doing exactly what I thought it would do as a stock and a company. And I love their prospects for the future. I probably will hold on to this one long term. I might sell a portion just because that is going to be like a way too large of a position, too big of a percentage of my portfolio. But, yeah. Or maybe not. Maybe I just have to think about what I think the prospects for Unity are. I don't know, but I like it.
Guy, you're going to stay in too, probably, Jordan, right? Knowing you.
I'll probably sell half.
Sell half? That makes sense. Fine Way, I guess, and Lisa Autry were discussing Robinhood, the Robinhood IPO, which I think is a really interesting IPO. I can't wait. I can't wait for it, guys.
Now, is that going to be a direct IPO where they can like let their shareholders or their account holders actually just buy some pre-IPO shares direct?
Dude, Dave, you know Vlad. Of course it's going to be a direct IPO, dude.
Yeah.
Of course it will be. Of course it will be. They know exactly what they're doing. They're not going to go all Wall Street. They hate Wall Street. Are you kidding me? Hell no. They're going to do a direct IPO. I guarantee it. It's going to be a hot IPO. I hope it's going to be a seven-figure payday for each of us on that day. I don't know if I'm going to hold or sell when it happens. I guess we got to hold for, 6 months? But
yeah, whatever the
I think it's coming. By the way, something really cool. I think I told you guys, you guys might have read about the acquisition of Customer by Facebook yesterday. That was the number one customer with a K. They're like a CRM platform, B2B CRM platform. That was the number one holding in one of the first venture funds I've ever invested in,
really?
Social Leverage, which is Howard Lindzen's venture fund, which is Howard Lindzen of StockTwits. So congratulations, Howard. He's a friend of the show. I can't even imagine how many millions or tens of millions of dollars he's going to be rolling in now because of this.
Billion-dollar acquisition.
It's amazing, guys. The returns for the fund are astronomical. This is Howard's fund is going to be one of the top-performing small venture funds of the last decade or two decades, because his other biggest position is Robinhood. So imagine having cut in the venture fund is like $20 million fund. It's so tiny, right? And their two biggest holdings were seed investment in Robinhood, seed investment in Customer, seed investment in Wag Dog Walking, okay? Like they only invested in like 18 or 20 companies and three of them. One of them is going to be like a $15 to $20 billion IPO. Another $1 billion. Another $1 billion. I mean, it's amazing what Howard and Social Leverage has done. So just want to say congratulations, the whole Social Leverage team. There's a great team there and definitely friends of the show. So congrats.
Hey, Chris, I just want to remind you, I think you said you had a meeting that started nine minutes ago.
That's actually not till 2:45, but okay. I'm not going to keep this on.
just wanted to make sure you weren't.
Thank you.
20 minutes later.
Chris has a very unusual relationship with his calendar.
In that he doesn't know how to use it. And that he is often in the wrong time zone. And when he schedules a meeting with us, he usually puts it at the wrong time. Usually it's like at 3 a.m. And my mind goes to, he means 3 p.m. But no, it's never 3 p.m. It's like, that's a noon meeting.
No, it's worse because they changed the calendar. They got rid of that spin wheel that was so easy to use. Now you have to like type in the time on the calendar on Apple Cal. You not know that?
Yeah.
You have to type in the time, and it always gets screwed up because they make you do the minutes and the hours.
Just tell
like,
Siri
separately.
What time you want to add. Hey Siri, add a calendar invite for tomorrow at 1 p.m.
You know Chris doesn't talk to technology.
Do you know how many Siris? I have another Siri talking to me from behind. Sorry.
Dave, that's like going to be eventually 5,000 to 10,000 people's Siris now. They're going to go off with your calendar invite.
Oh, yeah, I forgot. You're not supposed to say that.
You're not supposed to say that. Oh, boy.
Some of the YouTubers who have to invoke the name of devices. They either bleep it out or they refer to it by another name. I should really have realized that I was on the air talking to...
People are asking us about Pershing Square. Guys,
I'm in.
I got my Pershing Square. I'm not adding to it or selling it. It's like Bitcoin to me right now. I just don't want to know. I own a lot of it, and it is what it is. I have trust in Ackman right now. I really do. If there's one guy on Wall Street that I will trust way more often than I mistrust, it's Bill Ackman. And I know he's controversial. I love the guy, and I'm happy to throw some money his way.
We each put in nearly $250,000 into an unknown, to-be-determined blank check that he's going to write at some point. That is, I can't think of anyone else that I would just, you know, give that money to and say, yeah, do what
no
you
way.
Wish. Invest in whatever
no
you
way.
Want.
I can't think of another name I would give it to, honestly. I would give it to Bill Ackman because I think he deserves it. I do. I think he deserves it. So, but that said, he was hedging pretty significantly this month in the market, and that's not been a great call for him. So, you know, I know he said it was so cheap, it was about the same cost as the first hedge he did earlier this year. So that's not awesome, but you know, whatever. He still deserves a blank check every once in a while.
I mean, who knows? He could end up being right. I sure hope not, because I'm not leveraged for that at the moment. But
you know what, Dave? He's investing. If you had a blank check and you got to invest in a super established company that's already well, I mean, he's not investing in an early stage venture, right? He's investing. Yeah. He's getting his choice of companies, right? That are pre-IPO. That's how do you mess that up, really? You gotta try to mess that up, right?
No, absolutely.
The bottom line is who makes the money on this stuff normally, guys? Normally, this money is hidden, and it goes to VCs, late-stage VCs, private equity, and investors.
Underwriters, yeah. Right? All these bankers that put the deal together make all the money.
And so why not just do these
things?
In
this new world, I actually love the whole SPAC. We've talked about SPAC so much on this. I think the concept is great. It has the potential for abuse and not being used well, but it really comes down to who's doing it. And Bill Ackman is going to do it right.
I want to let also the audience know I haven't doubled down yet on my bounce back stocks. It's been a really tough trade. Like I was hoping that they wouldn't creep up the way they've been creeping up the last week and a half, but they have been. I haven't doubled down, but I still have a pretty large position. Listen, if I miss the double down and it ends up being a 10% more instead of 100% more or 20% more, I'll live with that, guys. I'll have to live with that. But I'm not doubling down yet. I'm getting close.
Are you really? Because I haven't doubled down. I'm still happy with my positions. I think everything's good. I haven't even checked. Yeah, I'm doing okay. I'm up 8% on those bounce back trades.
There's way too many areas of this market that we're having to look at, guys, and think about. There's way too many sector trades here. There's way too many ticker-specific trades. There's way too many SPACs. There's way too many of these companies that we're looking at. I mean, guys, look at what we're doing this week. Look at what we have done already. And then we have an anime episode coming up on Thursday. Tomorrow we have our cyberpunk episode coming up. There's just way too much going on. Like, it's hard to focus.
I'm not focused on cyberpunk. I hope whoever the guest is can just tell me what it is and what I need to know.
I bought some. I bought it.
Of course
I bought
you did.
It yesterday. Yeah, I bought some cyberpunk. It's not cyberpunk. The company that is over the Polish gaming company over Cyberpunk. I bought
it. It's an ADR, right? It's
an ADR, yeah.
Or did you buy it on the Polish stock market?
No, I did not. I haven't done any of those foreign trades in a while.
I'm sorry, up I'm just gonna do 35% on my Nikola position.
I was just checking my Nikola. I was like, 35%. I don't want to like check it every 10 minutes, but like every hour, I feel when you have that big of a short position and it's levered and you know you're getting out in like 24 to 48 hours, I feel that checking it once an hour is reasonable and not overdoing it. It's nice to see that it's approaching 17 again. I would love to see it have a weak end of the day. And I've been feeling this all day. I've been feeling, I'm just speaking out of nowhere right now, but I'm feeling that it's going to have a weak end of the day and hopefully have another weak day tomorrow, and I'll flush out of it at that point. So we'll see. We'll see if that works out.
Let's see what's happened so far today. This is the one-day chart, or you see where that big drop down is. That was open, and so it kind of just has gone nowhere today.
Because
but
like,
it's trending down.
I don't even care if there's millions of shares coming on to cover on the short side. I think with every few million shares that comes on to cover on the short side, there will be 2 to 3 times that much totally ready to sell them their shares of the 160 that's available now to sell, right? Like I don't see how this thing starts to get real upward momentum over the next couple of days. End of the week could be a different story, but I just don't see it today. I don't see it tomorrow. Thursday is debatable.
So average volume on this stock is around 40 million shares. We've had 65 million trade today. Their market cap is down to $6.5 billion. I think it was...
That's not that many shares, Dave, considering what's going on.
No, it's not.
I think that these funds are putting on a multi-day sale. I don't know if they're selling half what they own or all of what they own, but however much they're selling, I think it's early enough in the week that they said, hey, let's put it over 3 days or 4 days or whatever it happens to be. And I just think we're going to see this selling pressure continue here tomorrow and at least into early Thursday.
So I'm with you.
It's hard to hold.
I'm maintaining this short. I want to see it drop down every day for the week, the whole week, and then I might consider selling.
It might consider.
Or rebuying. I have puts. I'll sell my puts.
I love it. CD Projekt Red. That is the Cyberpunk company. How are they doing today? Am I losing money in my...
What is it? It's CD Projekt with a K. Here it is. CD.
Oh, it's up again today. Nice. All right. There we go.
I can't find the stock. Hang on.
I didn't buy enough of it on it. I bought low six figures. I feel I need to own more of it, but I need to do my homework tonight before I do that. I'll make that decision tomorrow morning. Oh. What else? Anything else? Any other questions?
For me? No. I have nothing else to ask you. How about you guys in the live chat?
That's what I'm looking at.
M1 Bitcoin miners. That's an interesting idea. Remember, is Bitcoin mining still a thing?
Speaking of,
dude, you need like big GPUs for that, and this has a decent GPU, but it's not, you know, anything you're gonna.
Oh no!
About.
Yeah,
think of the $1,000 Mac Minis that you could just put in parallel and just say go.
No, you bought those NVIDIA.
We missed out on a 10Xer over a few months. So our buddy Ryan, okay, friend of the show, he invested in a Bitcoin mining operation that was like, I don't know, valued at sub $20 million. They were putting up about 10,000 computers for Bitcoin mining. And at the time, I was like, why are you investing
kind of,
in this? You know
some
nothing
kind of cold
about this.
Atmosphere with like in a cave or something. Was
yeah,
that the
just
one?
Just independent operation like in West Texas. You know what I'm saying? Just like an independent operation. There's 4 different cell sites that they have. I think there are 4,000 computers in each site. So I think they have 16,000 in total. What, you ready for this? They did them in 4 tranches. They're combining the tranches and they're IPOing it in Canada at 10x the price. So it looks like, theoretically, it looks like Ryan's going to make 10x his money if this whole deal comes together. They're getting acquired, rolling them up, IPOing it in Canada because it's so hot right now. He just got, I think, lucky timing, right, with mm-hmm. with Bitcoin.
Yeah.
So Brian, man, is about to make 10x. That's going to be a
that's awesome.
A hell of a trade. Not a trade, private investment. We could have gotten in on it, but I didn't even bring it to you guys. I was like, we're not doing that, right? I mean, we wouldn't have really looked at that, would we?
No, I wouldn't have.
No. So we just missed out on that. But
I have some mining server somewhere. I subscribe to basically. I'll have to check and see how I'm doing in my mining operation. I do a little of everything.
You have a mining operation?
Yeah. I have some shared servers that I have been mining. I can't even remember what the name of the company is.
I'm sorry, guys. I'm just reading through some. Neo upgraded by JP Morgan to a $79 price.
You know, get it down 11% today.
It's up?
It's down 11% today.
That makes more sense because of Nikola. So let me just tell you something about JP Morgan. Who would ever listen to JP Morgan ever again about anything after they're at, you know, this guy, the analyst on Nikola, that he had like a $70, $60, $70 price, and then he lowered it to a $45 price target. And now he's like keeping with it even now. And even after the news yesterday, he came out and said that he thinks it was a good thing for Nikola because now they get to focus.
Is this that guy that it's on CNBC that's always talking about Nikola and Tesla? That guy is an idiot. Oh my gosh.
I feel
terrible saying it, but. Oh my gosh. He has no sense of humor either because whoever the host was at the time made a joke and he was just like stone cold into the camera.
Okay. So I looked up his LinkedIn. Okay. Yeah. I was like, how is it even possible that after that press release, this guy is so deep in his own ways that he just so stubborn that he came out and said, hey, this is good news. Because now they get to focus on the rig business versus, well, they could have chosen to do that at any time.
Yeah.
Now their hand is
the fact
is
that the
forced.
Option was taken away from them to focus on something else. Now they have to kind of focus on this business that they chose not to earlier when they thought they might have a deal with GM.
He has to be maybe the worst analyst on Wall Street. Like, I don't know. I think his analyst rating was like, you know, bottom 50%. 50% tier. But dude, I can't listen. I don't listen to any analysts. You know that. I find it comical. I like to know what they're saying, but gosh, he just keeps digging in deeper. He won't let up. Stubborn. $45 price tag, Nikola. I think it was Gordon, guys. Yeah, I think it was Gordon.
So funny. Yeah, I watched
he's
the same
analyst
segment.
That's pro Nikola. Like, he's the only real analyst that's pro Nikola. Guys, people always want us to talk about Celsius energy drink, and I just can't do it. I know it's like the hottest thing in the world, but when I research Celsius, they're like a regional energy drink that's on fire. Their stock is on fire. Like, I can't believe I missed this, but. Even going back, I don't know why I would have invested going back. It just, even when I look at the data isn't even that crazy strong. And I'm just shocked at how well this Celsius energy drink is doing. It's like one of these negative calorie type energy drinks or something like that.
I don't know. I've never heard of it.
They're on fire, dude. It's like one of the hottest stocks, and I don't even understand why. I love that Nikola's about to fall for the 16s. So. All right, so let's call it a day. Are you good with that?
I'm just trying to figure out what Celsius energy drink is real quick, and then we can call it a day. Here it is.
Well, all right.
Fuel your fall?
I think it's like a negative calorie thing, dude.
Active lifestyle?
But how is that energy if it takes away energy?
It gives you heat, proven performance, zero calorie, jackfruit. This one has energy and calories. This one has zero. Who knows?
I don't know. I don't know why it would be that much better than anything else. People do seem to like it, though. I've kind of been following it on Twitter, and they do seem to like it. But man,
I've only got one energy drink that I'm into, and that's cappuccinos.
You know what? That's a big, big trend right now, is going to bars, and instead of ordering Red Bull, people are getting like it's not a cappuccino, but like a
coffee,
like,
drinks.
It's like a cold cappuccino. Dude, I'm losing my mind. Martini. It's like a martini.
Cold brew martini?
Cold brew martini. Like, that's the big thing of the year, 2000. I don't know that because I haven't been out in 2020, but I see it on Twitter.
I can totally see that. I have some coffee vodka that I bought from a random, what do you call it, distillery that was, like, did these interesting flavors on some random trip. I don't know. I don't know where I was. That story went absolutely nowhere.
Money off that. And I mean, bars will do well, right? Because the big issue, like, at our bar, and yours too, Dave, is that, like, people come in and they ask for Red Bull. Well, Red Bull is so expensive, and they keep hiking the prices up, that bars will either replace Red Bull with, like, one of the knockoffs. But then some people get annoyed that it's a knockoff. And like, if you're a high-end place, like we're a higher-end restaurant, we can't just serve some knockoff. People want Red Bull, you got to give them Red Bull, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I love the concept of people coming in and asking for like an iced cappuccino, whatever, you know, like in as a replacement.
Instead of a brand name. That
Man, Red Bull is such a wheels-off drink. I can't imagine ordering a Red Bull this day and age. That's not good for you, by the way. It's not good for you at all.
But I love it as a restaurant, because now we'll probably make more money, because we won't have to pay those ridiculously priced Red Bulls on all those drinks.
Yeah.
We could just throw some frappe martini. Sorry, guys, I'm not getting the terminology right. Espresso martini all the way. Yeah. So like.
Wait, espresso martini. That's what they always serve on the below deck, right?
Below deck. Yes. Yes.
That sounds amazing. I might have one of those right now.
It's only Tuesday, Dave.
So I guess it
Friday though.
Too right.
Yeah.
It's basically vodka and espresso chilled, right?
Yeah.
I love it. That's way more profitable to serve in a restaurant than a Red Bull vodka. Love it. All right, guys. I'm gonna go.
All right. I guess that means we all gotta go.
We do have two awesome episodes coming though. So
yeah, I don't remember what you said tomorrow is, because I have not done any research or made a thumbnail.
It's the game. We were just talking about it. It's the Cyberpunk episode.
Okay. Cyberpunk is tomorrow.
Tomorrow's Cyberpunk. The Cyberpunk comes out on December 10th, but I think the media embargo is December 7th. Okay, guys? So this is why it's really important for y'all to watch our Cyberpunk episode tomorrow. We are bringing in the Dumb Money community Cyberpunk expert. He did a high conviction Cyberpunk thesis report in our Discord community. You can go to our Discord community to read about it, dumbmoney.tv/Discord, or you can join us on tomorrow's show and he will walk you through the report. We will debate the report. We will challenge the report. And knowing me, I'll either triple down or exit out of my Cyberpunk investment by the end of tomorrow's episode. So not one you want to miss. Hit the alert. Make sure you
that
get
that. Sounds really exciting. I think I'm going to show up for that one.
You better.
If you don't, it won't go live.
Hey, guys, be sure you do hit the like button if you have not done it already. Subscribe, hit the bell so you know about that show tomorrow, and do all the things, like all the buttons. Go to dumbmoney.tv if you want to find all the nice places you can follow us. And that's going to do it for us. Thank you guys so much for watching. We are Dumb Money. We will see you right here. What time are we doing it? 11? Do we have
11?
Can we do
we'll
it?
Talk about the stimulus tomorrow, too. You're asking about the stimulus. We will talk about it tomorrow, I promise you. So keep it 11 Central. 12
11 Central.
Eastern.
All right. We'll see you then.